I know my watch is running faster than all other watches, and the purpose is very clear, that I should never be late again. And because my watch is running faster than everybody else's watch, I'm panicking about 12 o'clock. 12 o'clock, we should all be in the chamber. There's a joint sitting of the National Council of Provinces with the National Assembly. And therefore, all of us must be there. It is a dishonorable, I think it's the wrong word to use. It's not respectable to retreat in chaos. We must live here orderly and not in a stampede so that we can go there. We have in front of us our agenda. This whole thing that you do not introduce people in the portfolio committee meeting is problematic because majority of the time you never know who's sitting where. You only acknowledge the members of the committee. But I am led to believe that we've got visitors and staff members of the department, plus staff members of the committee. I acknowledge everybody. Can we have the pleasure of the attendance of the minister and the deputy minister? We've got the whip of the committee, Ms. Mahlanyane. We've got all the parties. I don't see Mr. Lilia, but we have the UDM, we've got the COPE, we've got the DA, we've got the African National Congress. If there's a party that I have not acknowledged, please indicate so that I make sure that no party is left outside. Welcome, Bishop. The agenda for today, do we have any apologies, Secretary?
Yes, we've got an apology for Ms. Honorable Ms. Nyalungu, and Mem Tichetelo from the UCDP.
Thank you very much. Even though there have been so many of those apologies, the committee is correct. And because it's correct, we will consider the agenda in front of us. The first item on the agenda is the adoption of the minutes of the 1st of July, 2009. The second item is to consider the matters arising out of those minutes. And the third item is the briefing by the Commission on Restitution of Land Rights, which is going to be presented in the form of a presentation, progress made, challenges and strategies in place to finalize all claims by 2012. Is it possible, Secretary, to consider the minutes as read? Did everybody receive the minutes in time?
Yes.
Thank you. Can we take them as read?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Well, let us now consider matters arising from the minutes. I'm expecting hands. I don't think they are listed.
Chairperson, it's not a matter arising just on page 4. The adjournment was said we adjourned at 11:15, but specifically the amendment was about 11:45, and I just wanted to correct that because we were going to the plenary at 12 o'clock, so we adjourned just before that. I think we was just might be just a typing error with the 15:45.
I'm not so dressed in Spain. I did not particularly look at that. But if it gives me the extra 30 minutes of work, that's fine. Is there any other matter on the minutes? Mr. Swatan.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair President, and good morning, honorable members. I think with regard to matters arising, I think I will ask maybe from the researcher side, because last time on page 4, item number 8, the last paragraph, we requested information from the researchers, so that I don't know whether they've got it today. And another thing is with regard to the information coming from the information that we have requested from the department. So I received a letter also saying that they couldn't give us the information on the 3rd of July. So they still gathering that information. I think maybe we can talk through. We can talk that through today. Thank you.
Regarding the information from the researchers, I don't remember us giving them a particular deadline. I will come to their defense in that regard, precisely because there were two specific reasons why we didn't give them the deadline. We had not finalized which province we'll start with first at that point, because we were saying they must gather information in relation to the purpose of going to each province, where specifically we will land, which stakeholders we will meet, and when we have done the research on that, then they will give us that information. It's only on that basis that we will decide which province we go first to. So that's the reason. But then the second reason was, we had then concluded that we will, as a portfolio committee, sit and have a workshop on our own strategy. And we said we'll do so before we do site visits, oversight visits. So that's the reason why they've not given us the information. But I will stop there for defending them and ask them, why have you not given us the information?
Thank you, Chairman. I want to thank you for that defense. But at the same time, we have started, the researcher and I, we have started actually looking at the two provinces to say what are land reform projects which specifically address issues around post-settlement and where land has been bought as a going concern with issues of strategic partnerships. And we're doing that particularly in Limpopo. It's just that today we haven't finalized the report to be able to present to the committee. But at the same time, we're also looking at KZN with an interest to look at the issues around communal land rights, the Ingonyama Trust Board. So this is something that the researcher and I are working on it. As it is mentioned, that we didn't expect to present it today because we didn't have a sort of a deadline. If by the end of today we have a deadline, we're going to work on that and we'll be able to present to the committee. Thank you.
No, unfortunately, Mr. Menenza here is asking at the end of the day. We can't wait for the end of the day because we will not be in this committee. We will give them the deadline today. What is the sense in terms of your collection of information and the workshop, because the relationship between visits and the workshop is that the workshop must come first and the visits after. So we want to give you the deadline. Give us a guide.
Thank you. Without consulting with my colleague here, but I would say the workshop is planned for the fourth and the fifth according to the program. So at this point in time, we're actually working hard on putting together a concept document for that strategic planning workshop. If we get 2 weeks from now, we should be able to put something to the table.
this is really not right. We'll give you a week. We want that information. Remember, we're going to constituencies. For how long? Remember?
3 weeks.
For 3 weeks. So we can't give you 2 weeks. It's not possible. We give you 1 week and you give us the information. But you will have to get it to where we will be, because it's not our fault that we will be away from Parliament. And no, I'm not asking permission. You must make sure we get the information where we will be. Will you have our addresses here in Parliament, our postal addresses? Thank you very much. That decision is taken, ladies and gentlemen. The workshop is on the 4th and the 5th for the strategy of the Portfolio Committee of August. And then we will then visit the provinces, the two provinces thereafter, on the date that we will settle ourselves. But we have to have a strategy for the Portfolio Committee first, in terms of how we will conduct our oversight and keep the two gentlemen next to me on a straight line. Thank you very much. That was the matter arising out of the minutes. Can we go on if there's any other matter? Being there being no other business on the minutes, I put the minutes to the meeting. Agreed? We stay. Thank you very much. Well, not one party can support each other. I want another party. Chabeleng, Chabeleng, Honorable, thank you very much. The minutes have been adopted. Can we move on to the third item on the agenda, the briefing by the Commission? Can we, before we deal with the briefing by the Commission, Ms. Chetty, we had a series of other documents that should have been presented to us by the department other than the commission. Did we receive all of that?
Yes, all that information is included in the addendum to the presentation.
Is every member having the copy of the addendum?
No, by the department. Other information by the department, sir?
Yes.
Pumla, is it the notice that you submitted? It's in the addendum. It's all the information in the addendum.
I want to draw the attention of the members so that nobody will say after this meeting the information has not been made available. So I want the members to look at the documentation submitted so that they know now that all the documentation that we wanted has now been made available. Is there any member that didn't get the information? Stay.
Chairperson, that just the addendum that they're talking about, because I see it here, but I didn't receive the addendum. I've got the other two documents.
Then I'm talking about the information from the department to the committee. Now, Ms. Nyanzwa must give you that information. It's available. Is everybody happy now? Commissioner? Yes?
Chairperson, I think I'm a bit confused here. I'm not sure which information are you talking about. Okay. Yes. Now, I received the copies, but I'm not sure that you're saying it's some other information that we were supposed to receive.
Those who were part of that meeting at V22, was it 227?
Yes.
Those of you who were there at V227 would have sympathized with Ms. Chetty, the way the committee grilled her for the information that should have come from the department that was not made available. Now, I am saying all that information should be in the package that has been handed to us now. If it is not, I want members to look at it and see whether it's there or not. If it is not, they must say now, so that I can then make a follow-up with the department if that information is not adequate. Mercedes.
Just to say that the outstanding information was submitted to FUMLA and FUMELO. All that information was submitted last week for distribution to members. Thank you.
That's why I'm saying I'm not dealing with you now. I'm talking to portfolio committee members, whether they have got the information that they required or not. So that if they don't have that information, there are two secretaries here that should have made that information available to the members. I want to call Commissioner Mpela to do the presentation. Time is running out. All housekeeping matters should have been dealt with between members and the secretary, not in this meeting. I don't want to deal with those matters. I want us to receive the information from Commissioner Mpela. Commissioner, please.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister and Deputy Minister, Honorable Members, colleagues. I'm not alone here. I'm accompanied by other commissioners. Just to say, Commissioner for Northwest and Gauteng, who is also Commissioner for Acting Commissioner from Mpumalanga, Medumisi Boka is indisposed. She's hospitalized. She's not able to be with us here today. But I've got Mkachanu Mkachanu, the director in her office, who's sitting at the back. Can you raise up your hands, brother? Other commissioners, it's Telema Porto from Limpopo, just indicate Sydney Songwani from Free State, Linda Faleni from Eastern Cape, Myoso Sibo from KZN. I'm also accompanied by the finance unit in the commission. I have Sanjay Singh who's sitting to me, next to me, and then Elizabeth Munisi, and then we have Walter Slaude also. I'm forgetting Commissioner Beverly Jansen from Western Cape. She's here with us. Thank you, Chair. Just quickly, just about our mission. I won't dwell on that. Just to say the purpose of the commission is to provide equitable redress to victims of racial land dispossession in terms of the Act and access to rising land, and also to foster national reconciliation and stability, to improve household welfare and underpinning economic growth, contributing to poverty alleviation, the broader objective linked to development. Strategic priorities of the Commission are stated as such: research and settlement of all outstanding claims, sustainable implementation of all land claims to realize development goals, effective and efficient communication with claimants and beneficiaries, stakeholder relationships, litigation processes in the land claims court, and monitoring and evaluation, just to be hands-on with what goes on with settled claims and projects. Just to say the mandate, the legislative framework, as you would know, restitution is contemplated in terms of the Constitution. And as a result, the Restitution of Land Rights Act was promulgated, Act 22 of 1994, to make it possible for victims of dispossession to claim their land rights. Just to say, in terms of the white paper, which is policy on land, the period 1995 to 1998 was set aside for lodgement, 1999 to 2004, 5 years for investigation and finalization of all claims, then 2000 to 2014 for the implementation of the orders of the Land Claims Court. The forms of compensation that restitution can take is financial or actual restoration of the land. Where this is feasible, where it is not, we can look around for alternative lands. or consider any other development in which claimants will benefit, or a combination of the above forms of compensation. The first years, 1995 to 1998, were mainly dedicated to policy formulation, staffing institutional framework for the implementation of restitution. Main delivery mechanisms were the Land Claims Court and the previous predecessor to the Commission, which is Advisory Commission on Land, which is ATLA. In 1999, as a result of the protracted and long-winded court processes, an amendment was effected to the Act to make it possible for the Minister to settle claims using an administrative process, an out-of-court process called in terms of Section 42D of the Act. This is just the process. The letters, I think, are very small, but from lodgement to gazetting to negotiations and settlement, there's about six main phases: pre-settlement phase, and the post-settlement phase also, as shown. Once we're done with the first phase, then we can actually concentrate on giving support to settled claims in the form of post-settlement support. The business process really is, there are three main ways of settling a claim. One of which is direct access to court. Claimants can approach court directly for settlement of their claims. The second one, as I've already indicated, is Section 42D, where the parties negotiate or agree out of court, and the minister ratifies the agreement in the form of Section 42, or commissioners, if commissioners or the minister. And the third one is reference to court. So normally, in some instances, landowners would oppose the merits of a claim. And in that case, we refer the claim to court. If we differ on price, we could be differing on the amount offered to landowners. The ultimate solution would be expropriation. Expropriation is a legalistic, long-winded, and still costly. And amendments to the Expropriation Act of 1975 have not been concluded. We had hoped that the Department of Public Works, which administers the Expropriation Act, would have by now concluded or finalized the amendments in order to bring restitution or the Expropriation Act in line with the Constitution. Previously, we could only expropriate for a public purpose versus expropriate to make it possible to expropriate for public interest. We believe that land reform in general is in the public interest. Process was started but never completed. This is too small. You can't draw it. This is our strategic plan. I think from the first option is we had there are 4,296 outstanding claims. If we work on the assumption that by 2012 we would have, by 2011, the year financial year 2011-2012, we should have finalized all claims. They are broken down as follows. In this current year, it will be 1,695. The following year, 1,535. In the third year, 920. However, we have worked on two scenarios, which is if it is by 2014, depending, of course, on other things. If all things remain the same, the first scenario would hold, and if things change significantly, rather if all things remain the same, the second scenario would hold. It means that I will only be able to do 865, 985 in the second year, the third year 915, 845, 505. And we'll explain in greater detail later. These are categories of claims. Claims with a mining aspect, 83 forestry claims, 609 conservation claims, 78. That's a great breakdown. I think it's fairly straightforward. And other claims including Transra applies in the Western Cape. It's an Eco Transformation of Certain Rural Areas Act, which applies to what once referred to in Coles former colored reserves. Phase one, just to say the challenges that business face. The first phase, lodgement has been completed, all claims have been lodged as we're talking. Phase two, screening and categorization has also been completed. Phase three, determination of qualification in terms of section two. You can see that we still have to finalize research on 3,900 claims of the 4,296. Phase four is negotiations, five settlement, and phase six implementation. Verification. In almost all instances, we are not able to trace all the claimants because they are scattered far and wide. So verification is always a challenge. Land rights in terms of Restitution Act versus broader community rights, that's also a big challenge because in certain instances, members of only a small group who are entitled to restitution in terms of the Act fall under jurisdiction of traditional authorities, and there's always a question of the land claimants proper versus the broader communities. Contribution to substance account challenges. We're saying our inability to trace certain of the claimants who do not come forward leads to money being held in substance account which is not being claimed over the years. Phase three, outstanding research. What we have done currently was to set up a research unit at national office to assist in the validation campaign. Validation means researching of all claims. Claims that were validated were prioritized for negotiations and no follow-up process to research others as a result of capacity constraint within the commission. We attempt to establish a focus team again nationally beginning of this year, and a rapid assessment scoping exercise was done which reveals a huge number of claims which are not researched, and some are quite complex and involve a huge number of properties as well as overlapping claims. This unit cannot finalize outstanding research on scale because it's a small unit. One of the major challenges is also unsurveyed land, particularly in the Eastern Cape. And we cannot finalize claims as long as this is not attended to, because the claim relates to a specific piece of property which identifiable boundaries. Unless we do that, we get land surveyed, we will not be able to finalize some of these claims. We have competing, overlapping, and conflicting rights, which in some instances are difficult to resolve as a result of historical legacies and various acts, some of which are still in force, like the Bantu Administration Act. It's not been repealed, and there are all those acts which are not repealed and which have conferred rights to different groups and categories of people. Intervention proposed, we need to reprioritize focus of human resources in offices to focus on finalizing the outstanding research, because claims cannot be settled if research is not finalized, and budgetary constraints prevent outsourcing even further settlement at scale. We'll talk to this point later. We have categorized claims in forestry as shown in the previous slide. We are saying instead of investigating individual claims, we could zoom in a region, like for example the claim in is Kriegwaland, which is over a certain area, a claim by the Griquas. We could focus on such a claim as we are already doing, but it's also one of the claims which presents very serious challenges regarding boundaries and the nature of the claim. Jurisdictional claims versus real claims. So move away from the Carnegie judgment, gravity of claims before they are investigated. The problem with the judgment which was offered by Carnegie insofar as research is concerned is that the commission doesn't have the power nor the authority to pronounce on the validity of a claim. All they need to do is research. He held the view that in the judgment that all claims are prima facie valid. So that's when all claims were gazetted as a result without research being finalized on them. Research state land, we need to streamline processes from state land, expropriation and the Department of Public Works, as we said. Valuation of state land needs to include public land under municipalities as part of state land, because municipalities, particularly in the Western Cape, are refusing to release state land, including, of course, the city. In most instances, we've got several cases where we need land, but land is not being sold. Public land is being treated as private land, and is presenting huge problems. It is being, preference is given for development and investment, is sold to developers, and is not released for land reform purposes. And profits at the expense of the people, we believe. There's a false dichotomy between people development and investment, that investments are mutually exclusive of development. I don't think that the dichotomy is necessarily right. And the argument about the tax base of municipalities is that if they release this land, they won't have any source of income and that kind of thing. So these are the debates that are being advanced. Phase four negotiations. We are facing huge challenges in finalizing a standing claim which relates to internal. Protracted negotiations, especially around the issue of price. You would remember that we have the view as a department that for the 10 bush in Mpumalanga, the prices were excessively inflated, but the High Court found that the prices were correct. We still believe that prices were highly inflated. In path-breaking mechanisms, long-winded processes like mediation and court referrals, up to now we've got cases which are 8 to 9, 10 years in court. Uncooperative negotiating partners at times who also buy their time, because as long as they buy time, they know that prices will shoot up at some point. Speculative negotiation processes, lack of full disclosure, where people plant trees on land and they are valued, they increase the price, but they do not have the license to grow trees on land. The bonds against properties, failure to disclose that they are being insolvent, they are insolvent in certain instances. Assessment of current farm infrastructure, which is also deteriorated. In most cases, since people knew that there were claims on land, they have never maintained their farm infrastructure. By the time we acquire the land, it's deteriorated to a point where it should actually be deducted in the form of depreciation. But normally, valuers don't take account the depreciation factor in. Collusion on price, abnormal excessive prices, dubious ethics, at times the use of non-registered valuers, and desktop valuation where people don't do in-local inspections. All strategies to address challenges in this regard have taken time to come to fruition, and along the way further problems emerge. And we are saying, for example, the commission as of now is not fully staffed up until recently in terms of commissioners. You are aware that sometime last year, yes, up until recently, two commissions did not have commissioners. On challenges and implications, quite quickly, I think we should refer to Well, I just say, in terms of the new approach, I think in the past we have handled the pre- and post-settlement process as two separate processes, and I think this needs to be combined. We might just also indicate that the dual role of the Commission in the pre- and post-settlement process is also responsible for the slow progress, because the Commission was set up to investigate and resolve claims. It was never given the infrastructure to do post-settlement. So once you break that up, it then, causes this problem of focusing on speedy resolution and also on long protracted processes of planning, integrated planning, for which the Commission was not capacitated. So we are saying this has been resolved because in the form of the new focus and mandate by the department and the new minister of actually focusing on rural development and realigning projects that did not work or are at the post-settlement stage to rural development, and a structured dedicated branch has been set up in the department which would also assist greatly in focusing on this. So this is no longer a big problem, we hope. Then we looking at challenge number two, I think the silo approach, particularly in KZN and Mpumalanga, where claims and labor tenants claims overlap. So because of the past way of doing things and working in silos, we found that this created more problems, particularly in KZN and Mpumalanga, where there were labor tenants issues and land claims. Where, for example, claims are settled, but within one community and, another group is excluded, and this causes tensions, and people have rights to the same land which is being claimed and all of that. So we are saying this was a problem. The joint business plans have been developed, but divergent priorities are militated against expeditious implementation. And we are saying now to address this problem, obviously land reform is one, it's restitution, it's redistribution, it's tenure reform. That is the approach, and I think we are fast also within the department, restructuring such that we are able to work in a much more integrated fashion, so far as that is concerned. Next slide. Risk management. The type of risk that we face as a commission, because we're dealing with a lot of money, millions and billions, probably billions, the risk factor is always an important issue, a strategic issue, where I think there's danger for wasteful, fruitless expenditure in the form of high prices because of the demands of speed in doing our work. And also, in certain instances, so far as financial compensation is concerned, there have been many fraudulent cases. There's also many other where claimants have gone to Home Affairs to get their false IDs in order to claim, and so on and so forth. But we have dealt with some of those areas. The financial skills that are needed to dispense of huge amounts of money, as I say, in terms of billions, it's also an important one which we are paying attention to. Budgets, I think lack of sufficient budgets affects performance, and so on, finalization of the programs. Because in order to finalize this, as I showed in my previous slide, we might need to have outsourced some of the work, because with the current capacity, it is going to be a huge challenge. Next one. Verification, I think we have talked to, a huge challenge. We are not able to get all the people at the same time. One community, people could be scattered far and wide across the length and breadth of the country, so it is not possible to trace all the people at all times. Others appear much later in the picture when the project is waiting and lay conflicting demands and that sort of thing. Conflict, I think, is a major issue that we have talked to, which is hampering negotiations and finalization of claims. Traditional leaders and boundary disputes. In Sikukuni alone, I think we have 72 chiefs. Initially, there were only three. Now they have proliferated to 73 with varying demands to land and to land rights, you know, and boundary disputes. So it's not an easy process. We've talked to deadlocks with landowners. Can we go to the next one? A high cost of land and dispute on valuations for track negotiations. We have talked to that. We've had meetings with agricultural unions. As we speak now, the unions are complaining that the commission is paying them 40% below market price. They have written a formal letter to say they are now not going to negotiate with us anymore, much against the perception that we are also paying excessive prices, but they have written to us formally. Claims with the mining aspect, we only have an agreement with Anglo Plat, but other mining houses, De Beers, BHP Billiton and others, and the small ones, we don't have such agreements, and we try hard to negotiate so that they do this in terms of the mining charter and the social labor plan, which is not being complied with in areas where there are claims against mining land. Forestry claims, these are complex, but we have agreement with forestry companies, Mondi, Sapi, and others. We have a standing agreement with Mondi. We still have to sign a memorandum of agreement with Sapi and a few others. We have an agreement with Water Affairs on how to settle claims on former, what we call, on Safcon land. The Development Facilitation Act, this is a process where individual developers approach the tribunal, it's particularly the problem in KZN, to obtain development rights on land. An ordinary land, which we could, for example, sugarcane land on any other land, where we could pay 10 times less. After they have acquired development rights, they would then say they're demanding to be paid development rights on their land, and that's a major issue along coastal areas, KZN. And in one community, for example, one claim, Dube, it cost us about 600 million. We could have, just one claim is not even finalized. That's where the Department of Housing launched housing recently, I think just before the elections. And, so only 3,000 hectares of land worth 600 million. So that already is an indication of what the problems are. Well, we could have done it differently. The Kruger National Park on conservation is a major issue. As you know, the previous administration took a decision that it not be restored because it is a national icon and all of that. But we are currently doing mapping and valuation of the land, and our estimation is that, and there is no alternative land because we are talking about 400,000 hectares, which was dispossessed from communities in Mpumalanga and Limpopo. Should we settle for financial compensation, it's not going to cost us less than 20 billion, just the Kruger National Park alone. And then Betterment in the Eastern Cape, that's where claimants were prevented from lodging at lake. They were not necessarily, it was not out of their own fault that they did not lodge a claim. They were told that betterment claims were not acceptable at the time, and as a result did not lodge claims. So we've got a huge movement called Bulama Sango, where we have been trying to seek both political solutions and to seek other forms of solutions. And they are taking the matter to court, and if they succeed in court, we think it is going to cost us not less than 10 billion. Actually, it's a conservative estimate because we are talking of no less than 200,000 households, people, households, yeah. their household. So that's going. But we also think that, we put to them the proposition, the proposal of them accepting development, and they are saying then we are treated like any other community. If you say we should take development, then by the state has a responsibility to develop communities. So how does that distinguish us as having rights in restitution? So that it's not an easy argument to resolve. It's with the lawyers, and it's likely to go to court at some point. We hope so. We are just saying there are a number of policy areas. The housing policy alignment not in place inter alia, which may delay the release of land by municipalities for restitution purposes. We talked to that. Long court processes, I think we met the judge, Judge Baum. The issue of the land claims court, where judges, most of them have resigned. Judge Muloto is at The Hague, and many others have resigned, the panel of judges. So there's also problems of capacity. They also have a problem with what they are paid. They also want to fall within the OSD, occupation specific dispensation, and be considered for better remuneration. Pre-1994 leases signed water rights. Normally, I think the water rights decision is a serious one. If we transfer land without water rights, it has certain implications for restoration that the project might not work as planned. We just say phase six implementation. I think we have talked to these challenges. We can pass that one. Post settlement, we have talked to that. I think it suffice to say post settlement process is a major challenge. What we have done, we've talked to various provincial departments to actually prioritize support to KZN. Has moved in this regard because they have set up a special purpose vehicle recently to address post-settlement issues. Mpumalanga is also doing the same through its Department of Agriculture, just to assist. This is just on top of what the department is doing to focus on these things. So we are negotiating agreements with various provinces to actually have a post-settlement dispensation where it would be possible for claims that have been settled to be resourced adequately and to be supported by provincial departments which are relevant to the operations of this project. I think we should have post-settlement and what is that? In terms of the statistics, we are saying since the inception of the commission, it has cost us to date about 20 billion settlement of claims since the inception. That's what this slide is talking to on the financial compensation. The second one is actually just a breakdown of what this amounts talk to. The number of dismissed claims, the number of that is the claims settled in the current year. I mean that's the past year, April 2008 to March 2009. We settled a total of 653 claims, and that is a cost of about three billion, and it is broken down into financial compensation and development. But what happens is that most of this money goes to the 3 billion that we have spent. That is just for land acquisition. And then we've got an amount called Section 42C, which is development grants, which still have to be allocated, but has not been allocated because the rest of the amount is spent on land acquisition. So all in all, if we count Section 42C money in terms of the Act, which is development assistance money, it would come to about 5 billion. But the 5 billion still we don't have. So the difference is about 2 billion we don't have. as a result, because that money is not there, because everything goes to land, it's not ring fence. Then we have projects that have been settled, or claims that have been settled just from April. No, this is not necessary, 30 to 30 April. Let's go to the budget. Can we go to the slide on the budget? The slide on the budget, 66%, as at the date of writing this report, we had spent about 80%. The operational budget is only 14%, because it's a quarter, that's what we have spent. But on the household, that is money for land acquisition and all of that, we have spent 80%. But as we talk as of now, today, it's standing at 97%, so all the budget of the commission is gone in one quarter. There is just a breakdown, expenditure per item, expenditure per office, capital transfer expenditure, which actually just says, the problem with this is that there will be a high rate of complaints from the public, because landowners are waiting transfers of their properties. We can't transfer, we can't allow, we can't sign transfer because we have no money. In terms of the PFMA, that's not allowed. So we will have certainly many complaints. We are unable to pay some of the transactions. Financial compensation, I know Hank in the Eastern Cape, they are waiting for their payments all over the show. Everybody is waiting for their payments. We don't just have the money. And that's where we're sitting at the moment. Let's just go on. Can we go to... We are just saying analysis per land value. We've done an analysis, Chairperson, which is what you had requested. That's what it appears between state, private, and total, and land cost per province. And then there's a breakdown per category. Can we go on? Per hectare. Grazing, dry lands, irrigation, game lands, citrus, sugarcane, and so on and so forth. It just shows the breakdown, what we have been paying per hectare per province. Yeah, maybe due to the time factor, we should hold it there. Can we go to the next one? Can we go to the next one? Oh. The agenda. Just quickly, one or two slides on the agenda. So this is the breakdown you had requested for, but it's not there. It's in the handout, which I talked to. And these are claims that are in the land claims court, which is about 174. And I talked to challenges about in the land claims court. All in all, those are the claims and the referral, those have been referred, those that are 48 have been referred, those that are subject to review, 35, direct access cases is 11, those that are on appeal, 4, others where we are compelled.
Excuse me, Commissioner.
Yes.
I'm not a fund in computer, but I think it is man-made, this thing of the screen, the color. I think that you can change it the same way you made it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why do we suffer so much? Because somebody decided to change the color of the page. And we don't see it.
Sorry.
The background is man-made, isn't it?
Yeah.
didn't say stop. I'm just saying that it must be something that can be avoided. I know that people do that on their spare time when they doodle. But we are suffering here because somebody decided to change the color of the background. Yeah, that's it. All the pages that we missed should have just been changed like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Apologies, Chairperson. It's also mindful of the time. Those that have been referred are 48, those that are under review, 35. Direct access, that's where communities approach courts directly, 11. Those that are under appeal, 4. Others where there are declaratory orders, orders to compel the commission to refer claims to court, is 76. And the total is as indicated, it's 174.
Then go to slide number 39.
Number 39. Of the previous one.
Slide number 39.
Yeah. 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 The previous one.
Why do you have a different number? I'm reading at the bottom. Analysis of average land rate per property.
Analysis per hectare. It's in the agenda.
Can you change the color?
Change the color. Analysis.
Slide number 39.
Yeah. No, in the new one. In the agenda.
Is it the previous one? Or you left me behind?
I see. Can we?
That one.
Yeah, it's part of the table, Chair. Yeah. Okay. It's 33. Yeah. That's the one. Is it this one, sir?
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to page 39 there, too. Page 2.
Yeah. 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 Okay.
That information, we asked specifically for that information. Now it's hidden under the color coding.
Okay. Then, Chairperson?
Yes.
The slide shows average price per hectare, per category, per province. Under grazing, I think the amount under grazing, dry land, grazing is also different. It's really because we didn't, it was not possible.
No, Commissioner Bell. Oh, yes. The purpose of that slide, yes. If you recall,
yes.
The honorable members wanted to know, remember under the argument of unwilling seller for one willing buyer, the prices are distorted because it's not a market price, it's all of them selling to one person. It's like a monopoly buyer.
Yeah.
So there was a distortion. So we wanted to find out where is this thing pronounced, which province. So we wanted to make a comparison. Where are we struggling? So we're not comparing whether it's grazing land or developed land or whatever. We wanted to find out where, which province is this thing pronounced. Is it the Western Cape? Is it the Eastern Cape? Is it Mpumalanga? Is it across the board? So that when we conclude that there is a phenomenon of unwilling sellers, we need to know where.
We come into that,
yeah. I don't hear the vibration there.
Yeah. Okay. So but a slight misunderstanding. That's the analysis. We think the problem, on average, I think it's in KZN and Mpumalanga, as you can see. Because in KZN, average cost of land per hectare is, in summary, 30. And actually, that's where we are experiencing the most serious resistance, 30,000 per hectare. And in Mpumalanga, it's about 17,000 per hectare. Obviously, where we have no problem is the Northern Cape, because most of that land is semi-desert, which comes to 2,000 per hectare. And Northwest is quite, I think, fine, with that average. The Free State similarly is okay. And the Eastern Cape just okay, just on the borderline. The problem would be KZN and Mpumalanga. Yes. Can we continue? I think let's just go to that one and conclude. Yeah, that's it.
Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you.
You have taken quite a substantive time. Now we have 45 minutes to interact with the information. Honourable members,
there's an opportunity now. Yeah, are all the commissioners here? Even the one in hospital is represented here by somebody from that office. We can interact with the information. Honourable members. Yes, I recognize both of you. Go ahead. The one closed by the leader, the deputy first.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I will start with this last slide about this average of land. And just to ask a question of clarity. It has to do with this rise in land price. And I looked at both slides, 38 and 39, together. I think, you know, if we look at the high land price for KZN and Mpumalanga, and I look at the next slide, page 39, and you compare, unfortunately, we don't have the prices for Eastern Cape and Free State and Gauteng and Western Cape there, so the comparison is difficult. But if you look at where the land price is high in comparison for KwaZulu-Natal and Mpumalanga, it's under sugar cane. And I think maybe that's why the prices for those two provinces is very high. But I think, Chair, my personal opinion is this doesn't help us in the question that we had, saying where the department buy land, the price of that piece of land rise. What we were looking for is the comparison of a specific piece of land compared to where a private owner buy a specific piece, compare sugarcane to sugarcane, and compare dry land to dry land in specific areas where a commercial farmer buy and then where the department buy, because this in that specific problem is not going to help us. That's just my first comment on what I saw here. And then there was two other questions that I wanted to ask. I can just find them quickly. On the first presentation, slide 8, where we spoke about these processes, restitution, pre- and post-settlement, and I heard it was mentioned earlier that pre-settlement and post-settlement will run together. I know when we had the discussion, the presentation last week, it was mentioned that it would take 3 to 4 years since settlement start until it ends, and my question specifically was why. I just want to find out from the Commissioner if this is specifically the problem, if there was a pre-settlement plan and then only after all these processes were finished, then they would start with the post-settlement. But it makes sense to me that the two things must run together, and I want to find out if it is running together. at this stage, or are they proposing that it runs together? And I think my second. And then just on page 17, with negotiations and settlements, it says here the Commission is facing huge challenges, and it's related internal as well as external. I think we kind of understand what the external challenges is. If a Commissioner can just maybe explain specifically the internal challenges, if it's only staff related and budget, or if there are any other challenges. And then just lastly, maybe for interest sake, on page 31 and 32, both of them, in this column where they speak about cumulative statistics, there's this HHSDEN things there on the top there that I don't understand what it stands for. Maybe if they can just briefly explain to us what that means so that we can read the columns. Page 31, yes. And 32, they all have those HHS, FFS things there on top. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Yeah, man, some of my questions have been at least being asked by my my colleague there. But I just want to add more. On the first slide, on the first presentation, slide number 17, and it is indicated here that there is a collusion in inflating price of the farm. So I just want to find out from the department how did they know about that collusion, and if they've ever done an investigation with regard to that, and how many officials are involved if they've done that, and what action are they going to take with regard to that if those people are found to have colluded with those people who are selling farms. And that's my first question. And another one is with regard to the question of the claims is also on the first presentation, number 15, slide number 15, on the phase outstanding research. Here it is indicated that there are some of the land that is not going to be processed with regard to claims because they are unsurveyed. So I just want to find out what are they going to do. Are they going to employ a surveyor to do that so that land could be accessed by those people who are actually claiming, or what are they going to do with regard to that? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. The previous member who has just spoken before me has partly asked the question I want to ask, but what I want to find out, who is appointing these evaluators? And secondly, what I want to find out again is how can a claimant be passive of having lost a claim? Just those two questions.
Can you repeat the second?
How can a claimant be passive after having lost a claim? Because I understand there are passive ones, claimants here who cannot be traced. Yes, thank you.
Ms. Tain wants to come back for a second bite because she sees that other people are not asking questions. So I'm not going to restrict her from asking questions if others are not. Ms. Tain, come back.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, I missed this one in my questions. Last week I asked a specific question, but unfortunately then we didn't have the commissioner with us. But the question was, and I think also on page 15, I think it relates to that, with the Lanetic judgment gazetting claims before they are investigated. My question last week was specifically around, I saw in Queenstown area there were claims gazetted and they have been found not valid. Where and how many other of these claims or these were gazetted, and where are they, and what is the department going to do about that specifically? Thank you, Chief.
Mm-hmm. sure this one, Commissioner Mbela, whether it's going to be, because you said the cabinet took a decision, so it means it's a decision from the highest level. They relate to the, it's more of a strategic question. Kruger National Park, government says that it is a national icon, international icon, national property, national asset, cannot be given back to the people. Now, it's only the one who has not suffered the deprivation and marginalization who can take that decision. But the one who has suffered the alienation and deprivation all these years still believes that I have been deprived. I could have developed like the people in Northwest whose land they are mining platinum and they're getting royalties. What about us? I know that you may not be able to answer that question. But Equality Court has a role to play where a judgment is made for one party in the other way, and there's judgment for the other party on the other way. Has the commission interpreted this judgment by the cabinet and in favor of the people? In what way did you do it? The reason why I'm asking the question, in the presentation, the vision of the commission simply, one, the commission should be leader of the victims of land racial dispossession in the restitution of land rights to ensure sustainable socio-economic development. That's the purpose of the commission. Now, if the commission is meant to do that, to fight the cause of the victims, when the cabinet makes that kind of decision in favor of the state that has taken the land away from the people, who stands on the side of the victims? That's my first question. My second question relates to the institutional capacity of the commission. You have given us all the information relating to the claims and the processes and all these other things. But you have not given us any reason why over 15 years you were transferring 4% of the land instead of 30 that you're targeting to transfer up to 2014. Therefore, there is no indication on your part that we will be able to meet the challenge of the next 26%. Clearly, if you went to follow the mission of the commission, the mission specifically says we have to promote reconciliation in this country between the ones that who took the land away from those who were dispossessed via equity for victims by the state to achieve sustainable development and equitable redistribution of land. Our responsibility as the portfolio committee is to insist that equitability can be visible, can be seen. Now we're asking you a question. Do you have the capacity to do this? If you don't, what are you going to do about it?
Go ahead. You can delegate upwards. But I'm asking the department.
Yes, thanks, Chairperson. I think the minister and deputy minister here probably. Yeah, assist with your question. The other ones I think quite quickly, we do have provincial averages per commodity, just that we didn't present the information that way, we could actually show what sugar cane in say Mpumalanga and KZN cost. So that's not a problem. We could present the information in that form. As with all other commodities, just to show where the discrepancies are. But my understanding is that valuation is region specific. There's no national norm. It depends on an area. Even within the same provinces, there could be differences. So it's my understanding, subject to correction. So you can't derive a national norm for any of these commodities. There would be obviously a.
In order to make that statement, Commissioner, you have to start from saying when they go to school, they get taught different standards.
Yeah.
Hence, they apply the different standards to different situations. If they go to the same schools, same textbooks, same teachers, and everything, why an application they will change the rules?
Okay. Now, my understanding is that strictly speaking about valuation as a science, you would find that, say, bananas in Mpumalanga would not really be precisely the same as, you know, your banana crop in KZN for a whole range of reasons, in the same way that we don't produce better mangoes than the Caribbeans, but better bananas than, say, the Caribbean. So even if you go on international norms, even local norms, so that, I think, your point taken, Chair, but normally that's what the valuers would argue. But if you take it further, yes, I would agree with you that it is a science that has been taught in a particular way to a particular group of people. Unfortunately, there are very few black valuers in this country. We don't know. We have tried to access some from the neighboring countries.
Before you color code the valuers, I'm worried about your approach. You see, our expectation as the committee is that the department would have particular standards, its own standards, which will be a national norm. And then when you approach the valuers, when they argue their own point, you compare it with you against yours, and then you then say there is a discrepancy. But you seem to be presenting their point of view rather than your departmental point of view when you're saying bananas in KZN and bananas in Mpumalanga will be priced differently because the valuers will argue that the cost of producing the bananas in Mpumalanga will be different from that producing in KwaZulu-Natal, like mangoes in the Caribbean. I'm not dealing with that. I'm dealing with what is the norm for the department as compared to, so that you can see whether the valuer is out of step or not. You don't seem to be taking us along that path.
Okay. Now I can come to that, Chair. What we've done was to approach APSA and the land bank, and so that there are certain norms which have already been established. And of course, there's a price index list which is used from time to time. We use that because it's...
You will excuse me, member. I am really getting impatient with Commissioner Bell. You see, Commissioner Bella, I'm reading from your mission.
Yeah.
This mission specifically insists on transformation. Now, if you go to APSA and say, give us some norms, and we develop norms, APSA will not want to change the status quo at all. They don't want transformation. Now, who will guide that kind of transformation in the department if APSA is the one who's going to give you norms?
Maybe let me not get into this debate, Chair, but the only, I think, authority, because valuation, we have to depend on some kind of authority. That's the argument. And the problem maybe has been with the policy that we're basing our everything that we do on market, is market-led policies. So you get market proxies for even pricing. So that has been part of the policy. maybe I should admit our, you know, constraint in that regard, that we've been following policy, official policy of government in that regard.
You're suggesting that government does not want transformation. It says let's just flow with the tide. Is that what government is saying? Why would government give us a vision and mission that's transformatory and then flow with the tide? I think let's leave that matter, and it exposes us to the understanding of what's happening in the department. This is what we wanted to understand, which means therefore when we're investigating the prices, they will be the prices that would have been acceptable to APSA, NetBank, Standard Bank, and so on. It would not be any point of view that says the department wants to transform the country in terms of land redistribution, and therefore we apply this particular approach. And when we negotiate on that basis. But when we negotiate, you want to maintain the status quo, from what you're saying. Can we not pass on this matter, ladies and gentlemen? Yes, Honorable Mahan.
Thank you, Mr. I just want to point out, sir, whether these norms from ASA could not be made available to the committee.
Fine, I think we can get them, but it does not address the fundamental question. Because, you see, when the committee was debating this matter, Honorable Members, I want to remind you, we were specific. We say we want to get to the bottom of the problem. Where are the willing buyers? Where are the willing sellers clashing? Is it the price? Is it the unwillingness to part with the land? What is it, collusion between the departmental staff and the estate agents and the valuers? Where is the problem? That's what we wanted to find out. So Commissioner Mbela is saying, here is the information in front of you, deduce from it. He's not answering our question. Perhaps it's not his task to answer the question. Perhaps it's our task. Let us use this information and deduce from it. Because we may be asking the wrong person the answers. Yes, Deputy Minister.
Yeah, Chair, I think you're coming close to where the problem is, because the problem here is fundamentally constitutional, because the Constitution provides the protection of individual land property rights, and by extrapolation, that then means that if the land restitution and land reform is premised on the protection of individual, it then flows that it then determined by the market price, which then means that in terms of determining what the price of this piece of land, the state and its institutions, including the Commission on Restitution, cannot veer away from the protection of the individual rights as enshrined in the Constitution. So it's going to be impossible for whether the state or the Commission to arrive at the particular norm, except a norm which is accepted in terms of what would be taken as market price. But I think the problem was also that the members are concerned also that even within the constraint of that constitutional guarantee, there is a problem, because within that constraint, there seem to be two market prices.
Mm-hmm.
There is a market price for the commission and all state institutions. Mm-hmm. There is a market price for individuals. Mm-hmm. So that grazing land, if it is sold to myself as an individual, I would buy it at a different price than if it is the commission or the department purchasing the land. And I think what we need together with the managers to assist the committee with is actual factual analysis of the difference between Mr. Mpela buying the land and Mr. Mpela buying the land as a commission. Because there is a suspicion or a that indeed there is that problem, that the sellers, so it's not even a willing buyer, willing seller. because the buyers look at who is buying,
yeah.
I mean the sellers. And I think that's what we must go back and come and report back an analysis of that discrepancy. Because while we are not necessarily saying tamper with the protection of the Constitution, but we must deal even with this artificial market, which discriminates between state or institutions buying and individuals buying. I think that's what we must come back and report back on.
Deputy Minister, the market allows for a bulk buyer to have a lower price than the one who buys one by one. On top of that, the market allows for the state to fix prices. We know of so many items or commodities in the market, Commissioner Mbella, where the state has fixed prices. Apart from being a bulk buyer and an empowered state that is buying land in large quantities, is able to buy goods and services every day in lower prices. Why not this one? And I take the Deputy Minister's last point. Let the Commission and the Department go back, develop strategies as a bulk buyer of land, so that you can get good, better prices than you are currently suffering. And already the minister has already given us an indication, Bishop, that they will go to the farmer unions and talk to them about whether they cannot come to a reasonable price that they can fix between the unions and the department, so that as a bulk buyer of land, the state can get good prices rather than this arrangement that we have now, because the commission should be empowered. You see, the vision and the mission of the commission is very clear. This is an activist commission on behalf of the victims of land dispossession. And therefore, being an activist, you have to find ways to benefit the victims rather than benefit the victims. We settle this matter on the basis that the department will come back and give us some ways. We have your question answered that the valuers are appointed by the department. So we now know that the commission and the department will come back and give us some strategies to fix this problem. It's only then perhaps we will know that they are not unwilling. It's just they are taking advantage of the market situation. We will know then. We can't know now. We'll read your information, whatever way is presented. We'll come to some tentative conclusions. But when you come back, you'll give us some more information. Thank you very much.
Just other thanks, Chair. Just other responses quickly. The pre and post settlement process, yes, it used to be two fragmented processes because for reasons, yes, of lack of capacity, because commissions did not have fully fleshed units just to address planning processes and also coordinate with other spheres and levels of government to ensure that plans that are required for implementing decisions of the Land Claims Court or the Commission are actually implemented. The problem really relating to capacity, because you need a certain different set of skills. For example, if you plant citrus, you need people with citrus expertise. If you restore land on citrus, on forestry, you also need people with forestry expertise. Regarding upstream and downstream processes, from planting to harvesting to marketing to all of those things. So you didn't have people specifically dedicated to some of those activities. Even in housing, where people choose houses, you depended on municipalities to come up with plans and all of that until houses are built. So you didn't have that group of people in the commission. So that was why you'd settle it late and not have the capacity internally to initiate planning process, even if it meant coordinating with various levels of government. The response we got from local authorities was that in most instances was an unfunded mandate, because we're talking about what you call areas of concurrent competence, which is at schedule three or six in the constitution, where local authorities would be required to do certain things in support of the claim. So they've always talked about what you call unfunded mandates and all of that. So that has been a huge, huge problem. But internally, yes, the constraints existed. Internal challenges, which we did not talk to, I think is what I've referred to.
Can you finish that one, the post-settlement?
Yeah.
There's an implicit question the commissioner asked here. Is it really the task of the commission to perform this function post-settlement, given the fact that the commission has a particular mission and vision? You have given us an answer tentatively, although you were not answering that question. You are dependent on other institutions to perform that function. So we may be demanding from the commission something that does not belong there.
Yes, Chairperson, we have always understood that it is not part of our mandate. But the dilemma was that, you see, we couldn't just leave it, because there was nobody responsible for it. We couldn't just give people land and say, well, they'll see to finish. We had to get involved in one way or the other.
Yeah, thank you. The minister here and myself come from the rural area of the Eastern Cape, near Grimstown. It's called Zambena. Him and I always argue about which side the N2 must go. Either it must go via Grimstown or via Alexandria. Now, he grew up near Grimstown, I grew up in Alexandria. Sometimes it's a subjective matter, and I think this is a subjective issue as well. Many of us, management style relates to wanting to manage something that you can control and not manage something that you cannot control. It is very clear that agriculture and other departments must come into the picture here for post-settlement support for the beneficiaries. Because you see, you can expect land bank to play a role in the acquisition of land. But once the bank gives the money, the clock starts ticking for the interest and the repayment of the money. Now, if post-settlement support has not got into the picture at all, there will be no reason why the bank would not take the farm back for defaulting, whereas the victim is actually the beneficiary of this deal, because the post-settlement support has not come into the picture at all. So I think it has to be settled once and for all, and I praise the President for putting together this team that says rural development should take over that responsibility, so that you relieve the Commission of doing the job that does not belong to them. Well, perhaps what we need to do from here, Commissioner Mbella, maybe you have thought that you were brought here for this special attention. No. We are liberating you in some way, because the minister and the deputy minister will come back and tell us how this whole thing is going to be taken over by the section of rural development and what is going to be the strategy to take it from there, so that it's coordinated at that level rather than by the commission, so that the commission can focus on distributing the land and restituting the land for the victims. But you have not told us how you will do that within the next 5 years. We're waiting for that now.
How we will do what, Chairperson?
You have 4% that you have distributed. You need to do 26%. So you have only 5 years.
Okay, we'll come to that.
I'm watching the time. That's why I'm prioritizing your answer.
Our response. Yeah. Thanks, Chairperson. Again, as you may be aware, the contribution of the commission was is about 2% since its inception. The 5% you are talking to is both the land reform as a whole, that is redistribution and restitution combined. So if you take both their contributions with the commission, commission's 2%, and land reform around 3%. So restitution addresses land that is claimed. It cannot deal with any other land. It's only land that is claimed. Whereas the redistribution would address any other land that is available, commercial land that must be bought or taken to actual for purposes of attaining the 30% target. But I think in terms of specific strategies, Chairperson, the department is that there's also a bigger question to the 30% to say what was the 30% informed by, because it is based on demand.
We are the internalism.
I'm just saying
you're shooting yourself in the foot. I want a smaller picture, not the bigger one. Why don't you just deal with a smaller picture?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we depend on the claimants because insofar as we are concerned, we think
your vision and mission says you are the activist on behalf of the claimant.
Yes.
You can't say you depend on the claimant.
Okay. No, we agree with that. That which has been claimed, we are dealing with, and we have no doubt that we'll be able to get all of that transferred. But as we have said, obviously we've talked about the Kruger National Park. Our position has always been that it should be restored, and we have also obtained a legal opinion on that, because in terms of the legal opinion, it is not possible for anybody to place a restriction on what is a constitutional prerogative in terms of the legal opinion that we got. And we are also prepared, we are advising claimants to exercise their right to, if should this matter go to court, to go and defend themselves in court based on the legal opinion that we obtain. So insofar as other land is concerned, which is under claim, we are restoring that.
This is a sentence you made here, and I'm curious. You advise the claimant, go and defend yourself in court. What does that mean?
We are saying in terms of the, because you see in terms of the act, this really depends. It deals with a balance of interest. It doesn't mean that in every situation when a land right or land is being claimed, it shall be restored. For example, Section 34 says any organ of state may approach court and request that a certain land, portion of land may not be restored. So and that would be informed by what is called national priorities or land of strategic importance, like Lohata in Northern Cape, which is an army school, and they're doing training there. And that was claimed, but it can't be restored for certain reasons. So, and I think there's also bearing in mind on strategic nature the reason for refusing to restore that land. In the case of Kruger National Park, we believe there are alternatives, there are alternative ways of looking at it. So we are saying, we are advising the claimants, because in terms of the act also, they can apply to the commission. If the state, say, for example, like cabinet did, the land cannot be restored. They can apply to us for legal assistance. That's section 29(4), which we are actually prepared to assist them with. We presented the argument in cabinet. Well, we were not given much time, much space to present our argument. It was really basically the former did presenting the argument on Kruger National Park. But we were never asked to respond formally to the presentation by DID, which we would have done. But then cabinet took that decision. If it's taken by cabinet, I'm sure we would be constrained to go against cabinet decision on that matter until it is repealed.
Answer the England. Yeah, for Mr. Swadia, I'm letting the word slip.
Answer the England, I think it's a problem where we do require the land to be surveyed. It's a national problem, but it's more pronounced in some areas. But
excuse me, Commissioner.
Yes.
Excuse my intervention. The DG came to this portfolio committee and indicated that the land surveying is the jurisdiction of the department. And he told us that you have capacity within the department to do this work. Now you're telling us now that unsurveyed land cannot be transferred because it should have jurisdiction, what boundaries and all this title deed and everything. Now you're contradicting your DG.
I'm not necessarily contradicting the DG, Chairperson, because I don't know in what the context the DG said that, but we know that there have been challenges. Every time we've gone out to them, they've had the need to go out and look for private surveyors, to contract surveyors to do this way. So the scale on which it has to be done requires internal capacity to do it, because surveyors can be very expensive. So, but what the DG, I'm sure, was saying, he was saying, having recognized this problem, we are beginning to build capacity internally within the department. That's what I understood him to be saying. Not that that capacity exists.
Let me make a note here that we will follow this one up with the DG. Clearly, because you see, we cannot on one side say we want to speed up these claims. On the other, we say we can't touch the unsurveyed land. We can't. There has to be some way. Remember, I'm working on your activist approach here. Your vision and your mission say you are always on the side of the victim. That's what you say. The DG also said that after the claim has been submitted and settled, there's a huge space in time. Hence your disappearing claimants. Can you comment on that? Remember that if the claimant wants land, that's not the only thing that that occupies the life of that particular claimant. Life must go on. Because his livelihood or her livelihood does not depend on the land that is claimed. Because you're claiming because it belongs to somebody else or is in the control of somebody else. So the claimant must make means currently. So if I live in Grahamstown and I have no means of livelihood in Grahamstown, I move to BE. So if you check the address in Grahamstown, you can't find me. You can only find me in BE. Otherwise, you go to that program on SABC Kumbulikai to find me. But the issue here is the time it takes between the lodging of the claim and the settlement and the transfer. Even according to them, even after the settlement, the time to transfer from the current owner to the new beneficiary is a long time. Why? because according to them, the deeds office belongs to the department as well.
I would be in a position, Chair, to answer that question on very specific cases, because in some it happens quite reasonably fast. But where we've had problems is when it comes to state land and when it comes to, you know, this unsurveyed land that we are talking about. Because that's where, as I said, we've had many challenges. In certain instances, yes, you might have instances where as a result of natural attrition in the amongst beneficiaries and in the commission, and also on the beneficiary side, there are instances where we agree on certain things and the claim is settled on certain terms by the minister, and they come back and want to change the basis upon the claim on which the claim was settled. So it's a number of challenges. In certain instances, yes, you do find instances where, for example, property descriptions, insofar as these searches are concerned, there is also a discrepancy in the information provided by different, that we get from different sources. In certain instances, we've had to go out and actually adjust the boundaries of properties because the property description given is not does not reconcile with what we have been told by claimants. So we are, you know, we get involved in that all the time. But in certain instances, you are quite, you are quite right. It could have happened much faster, and it only needs all what it needs is certainly an improvement in the business process. But you're quite right. There would be a number of instances where we can do it faster and better if all these services were available on demand.
Now we got to our time now, but we have those two questions that we still have to answer. Collusion with the price fixing. It is in your country. The question is where and what have you done about it?
Collusion is a normal.
Would you want to answer that question in writing?
It's we can do that, but we could also do
thank
it.
You, thank you very much. Give us in writing.
The second question is you are getting non-valid case. There was a specific case mentioned about the town.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair. As that question is in relation to farms that were prima facie, we found that there is evidence that there were removals. But then we gazetted. But then on detailed research, we find that the removal was pre-1913. So it was before the actual 1913 disposition. So prima facie, there was a case that these were claims, like what the chief has talked about in the Carnegie judgment, that prima facie case we were gazetting claims in bulk. So this was part of that process of gazetting. Prima facie, we found out there was a disposition, but in detail we found out that it was pre-1913. Just before 1913, actually it was 1913 May than June 1913. So it was just very close to 1913. So we had to de-gazette because of that.
Could I just say also legal precedence in answering this? Chairperson, the Richter's first case, this when the first, I think, just in the early stages of the life of the department, it was dismissed as a historical claim. But when the DG was a lawyer, Mr. Butlander Jeff, left the department, he assisted the community to actually argue that it be accepted, and it was accepted as such. But it is a historical claim, it's prior to 1913. So you've got situations where, I mean, people would go out, make legal arguments, and actually get away with a certain sort of position or precedent. So even then, you legally, there's a claim which is historical, which was then accepted because of arguments in court.
Thank you, Commissioner. You see, I'm guided by you, your document. The document in front of us says that in terms of your vision, you are the activist in favor of the victims. And therefore, whatever you do, you always make sure that you defend the rights and the interests of the victims. So when you say, this claim cannot be valid because the person has been dispossessed, yes, but before the date. And the date has been fixed by people who were negotiating at CODESA, not by the victims. So the minister and the deputy minister have a task in their hands to deal with these matters, because the mission, Mr. Minister, says this is to promote reconciliation via equity. So if equity is not ensured, then there will be no reconciliation. So we say that we come from a violent past. If we are to remove that violence, even in the history of the minds of our own people, it's vubeko mhlekazi, then there is no way there will be reconciliation in our country. We're talking about Zimbabwe, where Lancaster agreed that Britain will pay once you take a farm. And when there's disagreement among the people who negotiated in Lancaster, when the people were not there, then the people must accept that we will not get the land because there's disagreement among the people who agreed. It cannot work like that. It must work in a way that says the victim is king. It's like in the market. It says the consumer is king, isn't it? So in this commission and this department, the victim must be king. So you negotiate whatever you do in order to make the king the king. To make me King George. Make me the big one. Yes, ma'am.
Chairperson, I just wanted to say it can be taken to severe extremities. For in the Western Cape, you will find people agitating for us to go right back to 1652. And you also find people agitating for the airport, the entire Western Cape. People have lodged claims for the entire Western Cape, entire Eastern Cape, for the waterfront for that matter. So what I'm just saying, in certain cases it can be taken to extremities which would damage our economy.
I know, Commissioner, we do not want to be lunatics. We really would advocate nothing towards destruction of our country. What we're talking about is where we see it's not reasonable. As activists, talking about you, Commissioner, you should always be reasonable on the side of the victim. That's all. That's what we're talking about. Your own documents say so. So we say, as the portfolio committee, go out and be activists in favor of the victims and make sure that we get equity and make sure there's reconciliation in our country. Because we do not want nobody to turn our country into another Zimbabwe. We don't want that. We want to make sure there's peace in this country. In order for us to be able to achieve that, we have to be reasonable across the board, not in favor of the status quo, but in favor of the victims. Thank you very much. The bell has rung, and we have not exhausted your input, Commissioner, unfortunately. There are outstanding matters, but there are also substantive issues that you and the department must come back to us with. And we have to make sure that we set a date for doing that. It appears that, I don't know, according to the program for the week, we will not be here next week. And because of that, we'll give you a date by when we should come back and meet. But when you come back, you'll come with your DG.
to make sure that there is no passing of the buck about internal capacity of land surveying and the deeds office and everything, so that nobody is going to pass the buck. But thank you very much for the presentation. Thank you, Commissioner, for coming. We did not ask you questions. Thank you, Ms. Faleni, for standing in for the DG on the Queenstown question. But we have many questions than answers that have been supplied. We will come back to you. Some of the questions will be submitted to you in writing. Thank you very much. We appreciate your cooperation. The bell has rung. We must go now, so the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much. The time is 11:53.